O si fun e lo Olorun wi.
Monday morning making money. Olorun wi. Tokun wa. Ago mesan si ago mewa.
Tokun wa o si fun e.
O di jemejo.
Ninu iwe mimo Bibeli, Matthew 7:7. Mo ti kan Olorun wa si fun mi ni kya kya.
Tokun wa o si fun e lo Olorun wi. Tokun wa o si fun e lo Olorun wi. Tokun wa o si fun e lo Olorun wi. Tokun wa o si fun e lo Olorun wi.
Don't let them worry, I can keep you back, yeah. Professionally. are seen in about 180 countries by over 2 billion people, the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations came to a dramatic end yesterday night in Côte d'Ivoire, with the hosts clinching that trophy against a very much determined Nigerian side. It really happened. It's not the first time we're having such where countries host to win, but Ivory Coast did make history. They came from their ruins as the best loser to eventually emerge champions of Africa this time around. Good morning and welcome to Platform on Fresh 107.9 FM. This morning on Platform, we are doing a full review of what went down at Africa Cup of Nations in Ivory Coast. We'll start from the business of it. We'll look at the business angle of AFCON. $7 million in prize money for the winners and $4 million in prize money for the runners-up. We'll look at the viewership. It's been reported to be the highest so far for any Africa Cup of Nations Africa Cup of Nations campaign. At the same time, the Asian Cup was going on, but AFCON took the shine. Perhaps interesting times for African football. Video assistant referee, also quite exemplary, has been said by many people at AFCON. Would also touch on our coach, Yossi Pesero, the midfield problems of Nigeria, and what the future will hold for the Super Eagles of Nigeria. This is Platform on Fresh 107.9 FM. My name is Emmanuel Okay. Joining us on Platform this morning, we have veteran sports journalist Biodun Alabi. It's a pleasure to have you this morning.
Thank you so much, Mane. Good to be here.
Naturally, around this time, some years past, you wouldn't be in Nigeria. You would be coming back from covering those matches. But then bigger responsibilities came with management. Let's talk about coverage of AFCON. But before we go into the details, I want your general thoughts regards the organizing, regards everything surrounding AFCON and the nature of matches this time around.
Yeah, thank you. I think Cote d'Ivoire 2023 has given us a new vista, a new order, for African football in terms of organization. I mean, the Ivorians presented fantastic, spectacular, stadia, and in terms of organization, we didn't also hear of any itch at all, So, it was a great time, for Africa, and coupled with the fact that we had a 24-team format, when a single country is hosting a 24-team format, the Nations Cup has grown from, I think, 8-team format in 1980. It went on to 16, now 24, and when you have 24, certainly it will have effect on your infrastructure, the transportation system and all that. So I think it's been quite, eye-opening for us in Africa that, yes, we could move from the Nations Cup and then, apply to host bigger events like the World Cup. South Africa hosted the 2010 World Cup finals because, of course, they stand out in terms of infrastructure. So what is strong with West Africa also hosting the World Cup? Some people drove from Nigeria to Cote d'Ivoire. They spent like 7 hours on the road. I went to Mali in 2002 by road 2, it wasn't particularly smooth. But at the same time, ECOWAS could do better in terms of connecting the West African routes, and then maybe going forward to also create one currency, single currency for the entire continent.
Because
for those who Nigerian journalists that cover the events in South Africa, they went through hell. CFA is stronger now than Naira, and it gave them a whole lot of wahala, so to say. So for me, generally, it's been a fantastic time that we've had, and for me, it's football has won. It doesn't really matter whether it's Ivory Coast that won the title or Nigeria lost in the final. I think football has won, progress has won, social mobility has won, you know, and friendship has also won. We saw a whole lot of Nigerians, you know, who went to, who made friends in
Côte d'Ivoire,
in Ivory Coast, and those who also reunited with their families. I know some people who are from Osun State, from Oyo State, who also met their members of their family in Côte d'Ivoire. So it's been great, you know, generally, and we can only get better.
Interesting times. We are live on Facebook at Fresh 107.9 FM. Do well to join us there and watch our video. Drop your comments on there as well. We'll pick them up later on during the program. I read your article yesterday night. You tagged it, "It is what it is." But we'll come back to that and speak to that. But I want us to touch on the officiating briefly. We'll come to the Nigerian team in earnest, but let's touch on the officiating, particularly from the point of view of the video assistant referee. It's been celebrated around. I've read a lot of social media comments on how VAR has been not only effective, but fast. I wonder what we have done differently, that even the Europeans who designed and owned this technology did not utilize it effectively as we did.
Yeah, I think a lot of credit has to go to CAF, you know, for this. Mourinho also voiced it, that this is the best application of VAR he has ever seen, you know. But again, VAR, for some countries, they wish that the VAR, you know, was out of this tournament.
Nigeria, for instance,
against South Africa, you know. You know what we had to go through when we scored our second goal, and the VAR discovered that Alassane Youssouf, you know, had kicked Taopesi from the back
at the other end,
and a goal scored was now converted to a penalty kick against you, and that brought the equalizer. And I mean, it required that, which is why I feel that was the best game of Eagles in this tournament. You know, because I saw fear in their face when the South Africans got the equalizer. And I also thought, we could lose this match. But the boys rose to the occasion and they won the game. So, but generally speaking, VAR had been, you know, I think we need to give credit to CAF and to our referees, you know, for the way they processed the machine. Because the machine could just be the machine, you know, if it's not...
And the man behind the machine is malfunctioning.
Yeah, exactly. It's malfunctioning. So... I think the processing of VAR and the open heartedness with which it was used really got me fascinated, and I think Africa has to just improve from this level, and let's see it more at the next Nations Cup in Morocco. But again, for countries, individual countries, they just have to up their game and find a way of using VAR. For Nigeria, for instance, we must bring VAR to our league, you know. That will involve a whole lot of things. Communication has to move on to the next level, because you can't be using VAR, for instance, inside MK Abela Stadium, and you don't have electricity, you know, running. Yeah. I don't have the scoreboard running, because the fans also want to see your honesty, you know. Because what VAR has brought is that it has reduced the level of violence, you know, in the game. Against South Africa, we actually knew that Youssouf kicked the Pesitao from the back. And that was why we took it in good stead. Okay, so now, bring that to the local league in Nigeria without the fans also seeing it on the board, you know, that, okay, it was actually a foul.
Would have solved a lot of violence, violent issues.
A lot of things. So that would require a lot of investments anyway.
Infrastructure. But, let's come to the Super Eagles now. They had a shambolic run going into AFCON. I recall they lost about three or four games preceding the start of the tournament. And even in the first game against Equatorial Guinea, it was a 1-1 draw. And we thought the Super Eagles would not put up a spectacular performance, only for them to pick up against this same host country the next game, defeat them, and turn things around to qualify. Their performances have been hailed so far, but one clear thing that has been criticized is the lack of the attacking midfield option. Pesero did try to do without it by working on the flanks, but then it backfired in the final. Let's talk about the Super Eagles and how we can solidify this team going into at least the 2025 Africa Cup of Nations in Morocco.
It will have to be some kind of miracle for us to see players, one or two or three of them, that will come fill that hiatus in our midfield. You know, talking about offensive midfield ability. You know, historically, Nigeria has been, you know, a very blessed country when it comes to players with offensive playmaking abilities. Well, coming from the likes of Haruna Olerika, you know, to Henry Nwosu in 1980. Nwosu, then we had, yes, Okocha came, okay, and Okocha stayed till around 2006. And then after that tournament in Egypt, I covered the event and I saw what happened to us against Cote d'Ivoire, yes, in the semifinals in Alexandria. You know, we needed an enforcer, someone in the class of Okocha, but we didn't get. And so the Ivorians took the game to us, they beat us 1-0. And since that time, we've been struggling to have that man in the middle, the man that could gravitate the game, that would dictate the pace of the game.
The focal points.
Focal points, that will use his intuition, you know, to determine. That was what missed yesterday. You know, we needed somebody that could use his intuition. But we were stuck on the logic of Pesero. For Pesero, you know, the defense.
Flank it.
You know, has to be watertight. And then, you know, then breaks. You know, counter breaks and all of that. And that was what was responsible for all our goals. Apart from the penalty kick goals. Even the goals that were scored from the penalty kick goals, we have to go and look at the process. How did we actually win those penalty kicks? They were
fast breaks.
Okay. So, but the Ivorians sat down. And they studied that. And they knew that, okay. And in fact, yesterday, they found it difficult to break the middle. You know, because there are two layers. We have three layers. The last man in the goalpost is always called the last man of defense. But we had another layer in front of him. Four players or three players. Semi Ajayi, Calvin Bassey, and Tristan Kong. So, and in front of them, we had Onyeka, Wigan, you know, in front of them. So, we had like another four living in Wobi in front of them. And then we had the Chukwueze and Osimhen. It will be some miracle for us to actually get those kind of players in the next 1-2 years. We will be lucky. I don't know. Nobody thought there was one Stanley Nwabali somewhere, you know, until when
Pesero discovered him.
Peter Saidida, not even
okay, Ida.
Peter Saidida, you know, suggested him look, there's a young man here in Chippa United, and he was brought on board, and see what he was able to do in the tournament. He saved us a whole lot of embarrassment yesterday. It could have been more than that. It could have been more than 2-1 against Nigeria. So, but I mean, it won't be out of place for us to begin the process of producing players of those qualities, those names that I mentioned. And we have to really take the game to the streets, you know, for you to get such players. Those are not players that you teach how to play in the classroom. They don't play textbook football. These are players that are born footballers who know who could control the ball, you know, at whatever velocity the ball is coming, and they know the next thing to do. The great Muda Lawa already had in his mind where he was going to control the ball to, or JJ Okocha. Yeah. You know, we needed a player in the class of Okocha that could take a free kick, you know, as we were going to the end of the first half in 2004 against Cameroon. We were trailing them by a long goal, a toe scored, and we were going on break. And we needed to actually equal the scoreline.
Magically.
We had a free kick. Okocha stepped up, and the ball was at the back of the net. And we came in the second half, Kanu gave a telling pass to Taka, and that was the end of the game. So, that's what missed in this entire tournament. And it's not totally the fault of Pesero. Pesero has just been conservative with the kind of players he met, you know. And because a lot of people cried heavily yesterday. They wanted Iwobi to be removed you know, earlier on in the game. But again, the question is that if you took Wobi away, who were you going to replace him with? Aribo has not come to this tournament at all, completely, you know. He didn't come to this tournament at all. Beyond that, he doesn't have the qualities, you know, with due respect to him. And so, it's going to take a lot of hard work for us to have those kind of talent, because our football thrives on individuality, you know. Don't let us kid ourselves. Some people say football has evolved, you know. Yes, it has evolved, truly. But again, what is also wrong in us using our strength, our comparative advantage, and using our environment? Why is it that the East Africans are the ones that are still dominating long distance races? What are they doing well? So for Nigeria, we must really go back to the streets, you know, initiate grassroots football, grassroots policies. And it's not just down to the NFF, it also comes down to the states too. The governors are sleeping, you know, in their different states. They are not seeing sport. They have not also come to understand the power of football, you know, in such a way that they will realize that if they could invest in their local teams, then they could also ensure, one, employment, then two, ensure social mobility, you know, and then bring what we call the feel good to the economy. So it's a whole gamut of challenges that we have to face. And I'm worried that in the next 2 years, if we don't look for that man and a replacement for him, you know, in the middle of the park, who will play like this again in Morocco.
But ever since Okocha left and that generation, we've had almost every other department replaced successfully. Mm. In the goalkeeping area, Vincent Enyama, we moved from Enyama to Kali Keme. Ikeme was a fantastic goalkeeper, but for cancer, for leukemia, that cut his career short. But then we also now have Nwabali after that bit of hiatus. In the defense line, we've had transitions. We've had from the days of Yobo to the elders in the Chejile. We now have the fresh pack now, Calvin Bassey, Ekong in defense. On the flanks, we've moved from Victor Moses. We've successfully replaced almost every other area. What's responsible? I want to cast your mind back to the under-17 that produced, that announced Osimhen and Chukwueze. There was a third man there that was also fantastic, the captain of the team, Wakali. Why has he not been able to also climb the ranks like his colleagues, his compatriots at that time? And you look at it, are we lacking that particular type of talent? Because you also look at every other area of the midfield, we are not bad there. If you're talking about defensive midfield, we have an abundance.
Ndidi.
From Ndidi to Alassane Youssouf, who is a discovery, to Frank Onyeka, Etebo, many of them who can play defensively. But that attack, what is wrong with us?
I think it's just a question of really opening up, you know, much as possible, you know, to look at players of different qualities, you know, and bring them to the national team. You know, those players that I mentioned too, they were not particularly players that grew with the science of the game, except for the fact that our coach went to Germany early enough to Germany. You know, Ilerica didn't go anywhere. You know, he honed the talent here. We also had Henry Wosu didn't also go anywhere. I think he went to Cote d'Ivoire, you know, in the 80s. Keshi led them, you know. But nobody has been spectacularly as good as Okocha over the years, essentially because, not because we have not found a replacement for Okocha, but because we have not also found replicas for Okocha, you know. In the era of Okocha, anytime Okocha was not at the party, you had a Thompson Oliha, you had a Zilgo in the midfield. Those who will make up
for his absence,
you know. So now, but in this situation, we have an Iwobi. Of course, if you look at the last two Nations Cup finals, Iwobi was there, and he actually acquitted himself well, you know, because he had the support, you know, in the midfield. okay, and so the burden was not particularly too heavy for him to carry. But this time around, he had a very heavy burden in Cote d'Ivoire, and he didn't have the support. That's one. Two, he also couldn't also come out in his majesty because of the game plan, the formation of Pesero. Pesero stuck to defensive formation, for too long in this tournament. I was expecting him to actually switch his tactics against Ivory Coast yesterday, but he didn't do that. So, but again, the question of the issue of intuition, on the part of the players now also comes in. Sometimes when your coach tells you go it this way, and it's not working, you also have the freedom to express yourself and change the color of the game on the field of play, which I think is what we also lacked essentially. The players stuck too much, almost slavishly to the game plan Pesero gave them. And that was why the Ivorians ran us ragged yesterday. They were just spraying the balls to the flanks because they found the two layers in front of Nwabali
too porous.
Too difficult to break. And they had to go to the wings, okay? And Ola Aina was guilty, he actually got tired at about the point because Chukwueze was not also coming back to support him, the way he ought to have. So, it's a complete thing for us. We can't just single out a particular position and say, okay, when we lost Okocha, when Okocha actually ended his career, why is it difficult for us? Why has it been difficult for us to actually find a replacement? It's not every time that you have an Okocha. It's not in every generation that you had an Okocha. If you also look at this team, beyond the midfield frailties that we had, who is taking our free kicks, in the Super Eagles of today? What are the qualities, apart from Ekong coming up front to heading the ball and all of that, who out of our strikers, apart from Osimhen, is also gifted with area power that we used to have in the past? So, as we think that football is evolving, it's doing more with science, we must also not lose sight of individuality, talents. Talents are key in football. But again, the way you manage your talents, are what really matters. Brazil is still a very talented country. It still has a whole lot of talented players. But then they have been beaten by European teams because they have also not honed their talent the proper way. So for me, it's not a job for a day. It's not a job for a year, for two years, or 3 years, or 4 years. It's going to take a while for us to actually get to the level where we will have options, varieties of options on our bench, on the field, for us to deal with the color,
and even in the feeder team. We're due for a break now. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Platform, and our guest this morning is veteran sports journalist Biodun Alabi, and together we're looking at the just concluded Africa Cup of Nations qualifier. When we come back from this break, we'll pick another fresh angle. We've had a lot of foreign coaches, Clemens Westerhoff, and up to the recent times, Betty Vogt, Lars Lagerbach, Gernot Rohr, and now Josep Pesero. We look at this man's performance and whether at some point we wanted him to go after the first game of the tournament. I particularly was saying this man should resign. But then we look at whether he deserves that much more patience that other coaches have enjoyed, particularly someone like Gernot Rohr. We'll be back after this break. Please don't move a muscle.
Àkànṣe ọ̀sán orúkọ ní Jésù tí Ọlọ́run sàmúlùwà lọ ní kó wá gba ìbò lọ́rẹ́ pátá. Olha!
ìbẹ̀rẹ̀ gbé fọ́sítà lórí àgbo investment limited.
mo ti la gbárí ìsàchá ìrìn àjànà kù tí mọ́bílẹ̀ gbé dẹ̀rùn.
bó fẹ́ kó lọ́ba fẹ́ bí owó dé.
ilé aláwọ̀
bẹ́ẹ̀ greenland rẹ̀ yẹn.
bó fẹ́ olérà àjì éka 350 éka kan 600 éka méjì àbọ̀ 1.4.
bó fẹ́ àlàbàtà green garden.
ilé aláwọ̀
nímọ̀ bẹ̀ kò tó nǹkan.
tẹ̀lẹ̀ nímọ̀ nà olera lajì.
ní 300,000
500,000 rántẹ̀ éka kan.
ó fẹ́ lọ́pẹ̀jì.
ilé aláwọ̀
bẹ́ẹ̀. ẹ̀bí ilé àdébò orí gangan lọ́pẹ̀jì.
àìmí rè mọ bẹ̀.
iléeṣẹ́ fọ́jà náà
rè mọ̀ nà.
250 rẹ̀ lajì.
400 rántẹ̀ òdìdí éka.
éka méjì àbọ̀rẹ̀ 950.
a kò ní sanwó lù lọ́dún yẹn. ẹ̀jẹ̀ kára yẹ
kó òjò ń bọ̀.
ara fọ́ọ̀mù kò máa sanwó rẹ̀ díẹ̀ díẹ̀ bó bá ti pé lajì wá gbálẹ̀ rẹ̀
o. gbogbo oṣù fẹ́bọ́ọ̀lù àǹfààní máa tó pé o.
fọ́jà lọ sí agbo investment limited and sarudin house pepsi kwari labẹ́òkúta.
091-39-07-79-77.
Thank you for staying with us on platform this morning. Let's get back to the conversation. The new coach now, our coach Jose Pesero, came in under dicey circumstances after the sack of General Drawer. Many people did not agree with him at that point. We are just coming from an Africa Cup of Nations where an indigenous coach, Austin Eguavoen, took us there. The group stages were fantastic, but the first knockout game were out. But for Pesero, do you think he should continue at the helm of affairs of the Super Eagles?
Well, my response to that is yes and no. I've been one of those who strongly criticized Jose Pesero, especially because of our run-up to this event. We were losing to countries we were not supposed to lose to. We lost to Guinea-Bissau. I think we got a draw against Lesotho. Guinea-Bissau even came to Nigeria to beat us. We got a draw against Lesotho. And I mean, those are countries that we do respect to them. Those are countries that in many years, anyway, football has evolved, you know. So we can't also be saying they are still minnows of the game. I think those countries have also grown. But then what stops Nigeria from also growing, you know, and then telling the world that, telling all those countries, catch me if you can, you know. So, for me, I never liked Pesero. I never liked how he came and from whom he came. He came from
Moreno.
Amachu Pinnick.
Okay.
Yeah, it was...
We hear it was recommended by Mourinho.
Well, to Mourinho, well, so we're told by Amaju Pinnick, and he told us that he has a very deep knowledge of Nigerian football. And so, when the new NFL board came in, they didn't have the heart to actually tell Luke Pinnick in the face and say, oh no, this man has to go. And so they had to actually tag along. But along the line, I think during the second match or third match or so. I think it was second match. I got converted by Pesero, and I began to like him. I began to like what he was doing, and I began to also understand the fact that he was just limiting his strategies to the options
to what he has.
To what he has, you know. We have not gone to Cote d'Ivoire. We didn't go to Cote d'Ivoire with some of our most flamboyant players, especially in the midfield and in the attack, you know. Umar had to leave.
Ndidi's absence.
Ndidi also left because of injury. And so he had to actually grind out results from what he had. And so at that point in time, I felt, okay, let's look at what he could do. And he was marching on. He beat Cameroon. We beat Cote d'Ivoire. If you could beat Cote d'Ivoire and Cameroon in the same tournament, you know, with the same strategy. And beat South Africa with the same strategy, then there must be something unique about you. And the only minus I see in Pesero is his lack of influence, his lack of flexibility. He could have actually changed the game plan, you know, yesterday against Cote d'Ivoire. He failed to do that, and that was the bane. That was the error he made, and that's why we lost the cup. That's one of the reasons why we lost the cup. Now, coming to your question, the question of allowing him to stay or not, it's quite dicey, you know, because over the years too, we have employed and changed coaches at very fast rate. You know, Gennaro left. We brought in Aguavon. I was one of those who actually advocated that Aguavon should be allowed to manage the team for a long period of time. But what happened? Aguavon was taken away. Of course, Aguavon still has a job with the NFF, as technical director of the Nigerian Football Federation. But then I thought that Aguavon should have been allowed to handle the team, you know, up till now. If Aguavon had handled the Eagles up till now, very, very likely that we'll see those things that we missed in Cote d'Ivoire in the team. In his team, because Aguavon had been around for long. He was a component, he was a strong member of the 1994 class. And he knows what was done that point in time, you know, before Nigeria could achieve what, before the Eagles could achieve what is achieved in 1994. So, but as fate will have it, Aguavon was sacked and then was taken back to his job, technical director of the NFF, and then they brought in Pesero. But I think that the coaches have not, coaching has not really been the problem of the Super Eagles, essentially, you know. Some people have actually tagged Pesero as a tournament manager, you know, not qualifier manager. But the question is that even under Westerhof, you know, the Eagles will not particularly play very well in qualifying matches between 1990 and 1994. But they were winning. And qualifying matches, home and away games, were down to the players, to the ability of the players. I remember a particular year we went to play against Congo in Pont Noir under a very, very undulating pitch, you know. And then we needed to win that game. And then we won the game because the team just felt that, oh, we needed this match. And they went for it. I remember the goal came from Rashidi Yekini. Samba Bryce was in goal for Congo that time. Fantastic goalkeeper. Keshi just came in to, he had a tete-a-tete with Yekini, and Yekini fired it, and the ball was at the back of the net. So, if you're saying Pesero, it's just a tournament coach, then you have to cast your mind back to the era of Westerhof. You know, when did Westerhof flourish most between 1990 and 1994? It was during tournaments. It was during OGS 90, Senegal 92, then Tunisia 94, then the World Cup, you know. So even during the qualifying matches too, it was not down to Westerhof. It was down to the players, you know. It was down to their individual ability, you know, and their conviction to win matches. So that is what is missing. So for me, I think we're going to be starting all over again if you sack Pesero. If you say he should go, if you don't retain him. We're going to bring in a new manager. And after
who's
the next...
Who's going to come with a new philosophy?
Who's going to come with a new philosophy after the next tournament in AFCON, in Morocco? We're likely to again say he should go. That will certainly have a very, very negative effect on the national team when you keep changing coaches 2 years, you know, as they come. Look at Senegal. Senegal has kept faith with their coach,
Alieu Cisse,
you know. And over the years, they are the best thing to have happened to African football in contemporary terms, Morocco and Senegal. So, I think Pesero will understand the system. For me, I see Cote d'Ivoire 2023 as an example of what we saw in 1990 when Westerhof also came. Westerhof came, we lost our first match scandalously to Algeria, 5-1. But he picked up the pieces from the first game and he took the team to the final, and we lost in the final to the same Algerian team. Now, if you had sacked Westerhof after that final game, we would not have seen what he could do in 1992, in 1994. So, for me, I think Pesero should stay. Let us up our game and let's commit him more. He has to live in Nigeria more. He has to work in Nigeria more. He has to watch look, what is missing or what we have missed in this tournament are just a few flavors. It sounds as if the team was totally bad. solid defense, solid goalkeeping. We had the wingers, we had the strikers, but the missing link was just the transition from the middle to the attack.
The attack.
Such that Osimhen became an enforcer when he was supposed to be a predator. You know, looking at the build of Osimhen shouldn't be coming to the. I saw him a couple of times.
I saw him on the flanks yesterday.
I saw him coming to defend, to head the ball. I mean, as a striker, no. So for me, I think Pesaro should be allowed to stay. You go bring a new manager now. He begins to introduce a new philosophy,
and it starts with his favorite player.
Okay, beautiful. Let's, and then there's also the question of affordability.
Hmm.
Affordability. Are we sure we'll also be able to pay Pesaro regularly if you allow him to stay?
Hmm.
And that here was a man who was actually told to go, and he said, okay, fine. They said, are you going to stay? But if you're going to stay, we're going to reduce your pay. And he agreed, meaning that he wants to work with Nigeria.
So we should keep faith with him.
We should keep faith with him. For me.
Interesting. You can join us in this conversation this morning. 0815-432-1079. 0815-432-1079 and 0818-111-1079. 0818-111-1079. While you were building up the conversation, something came up, and that is the lack of homegrown talent.
Mm.
And is one major issue we're facing. We went to that competition without any player from the home front. The South African team, on the other hand, had about 8 players playing for Mamelodi Sundowns alone. So showing you how much they built their strength around homegrown talent. Let's talk about the neglect of our homegrown football. The current chairman of SWAN in Ogun State wrote a think piece directing it to the governor after he was seen celebrating. But let's talk about this tournament, our homegrown football, the NPFL, the NNL, the NLO, the NWFL, and every other thing. How can we start mining talent from this local football?
Well, that's also a long shot. It will take the will of the federal government. I am sensing that President Tinubu will hold a meeting with the chairman of the NFF, because it's been a long while that we saw a president that will sit down to watch the Nations Cup and make his comment known. Tinubu watched the game, I think, against Equatorial Guinea. And he actually voiced this displeasure with the way the Eagles played in that game. And he actually passed the message to them, I'm not happy with you guys. You know, and that tells you that he's interested in the development of the game. I mentioned that somewhere this morning. What is wrong with recapitalizing our football? The banking sector used to be in the Stone Age in those years of the past. Some of us grew up here in Abeokuta. You enter the bank and then you have to collect a tally number before you could be attended to. Uh-huh. You have to sit down, you have to call your name and say, Mr. Bionan Abia, come for your money. But I can't remember the last time I entered the banking hall. And that's a function of recapitalization of the banking sector. Why can't you also bring that to football, to sports generally? If you recapitalize the Nigerian game, the best of our legs will stay back home. For instance, if we're able to pay an average Nigerian player ₦1 million per month, you know, and that is regularly paid apart from other allowances. If officiating improves, if security improves, if our pitches are good enough, are smooth enough for our teams to play,
visibility.
I think we're going to have the media coming. Television will come in, and we're going to engender a lot more interest in the local game. By doing that, our players will stay back more, you know, when they know that they have hope here. Our players are not staying back. The players have also, they have also jumped on the band. In fact, long ago, our players jumped on the bandwagon of Jakpa. You know, Jakpa had been in existence in Nigerian football long ago, even before now. And we're going to see it more. Our players are not staying back at all. They are not they are not after a few months, a few weeks in Nigeria with a particular club side, a particular agent, you find them in some funny countries. I was in Egypt 2006 during the Nations Cup. I went to a particular street called Sudan Street. I saw a whole lot of Yoruba boys, you know, and I asked them, I began to ask them questions. They said they came to, they planned to go to Europe. And so they wanted to use Egypt, you know, to move to other countries, to Europe. But they couldn't, they were stuck. So until we stop that drift, you know, we can't really get the best of our local football. But I know efforts are being made by the Elegbele-led MPFL committee. They are doing a fantastic job. They are trying to change the face of the league. But again, it comes with the efforts of everybody, even the media. How do we report the league matches? What interest do we show in the league matches? You know, every sports program now starts with European football. It's all about Chelsea, Man U, Arsenal. We don't give a look at the local league.
Local football.
But again, you can't blame the media, you know, extensively.
Because it's reflective of the society.
Exactly. So, because even our governors too, I know so many governors who will travel to London to watch Arsenal over the weekend, and they will not watch their own state teams, you know, in their different states. I know some governors who proudly don the jerseys of foreign teams, the foreign club sides. And I know some club sides that are still paying players as low as 60,000, 70,000 naira salary in Nigeria of today. So it comes with a whole lot of baggage. The problems are so many, and it requires a forum, you know, for us to come to understand the fact that what we are missing, you know, is what the Super Eagles is missing today is because of the systemic failure that we've had in our local football. You know, the best of our years in the history of the Super Eagles have been a function of how our league was run. After 1994, the Super Eagles were still flying in 2000, in 2002, in 2004, in 2000 in Nigeria, in 2002 in Mali, in 2004 in Tunisia. We got to the semi-finals. And the players that we found playing for us there were remnants of 1994. Go and check the 1996 Atlanta Olympic Games. You will see a combination of the 1994 squad in that team. There was Okocha, there was Mutiu, there was Uche Okechukwu. You know, I think there was no Uche Okafor. And we saw a sprinkle of other talents that had emerged after 1994, 1998, you know, in Kanu Nwankwo, Wilson Oruma, and the rest of them. So we can't stop going back to 1994 because it is the reference point for us.
We need to take another break now. And when we come back, it will be a home stretch. We'll talk about some standout players for Eagles in the tournament, and we'll look at hosting. CAF president said it that maybe Nigeria should put in a bid to host the World Cup. We'll see how feasible or how workable that is after this break. Please stay with us.
Thank you.
It's the platform on Fresh 107.9 FM. Our guest this morning is Biodu Alabi. Let's talk about standout performance, performers at this tournament. After the finals yesterday, our captain, Trust Ekong, was named man of the tournament. And we had a couple of other interesting players. On my list, Calvin Bassi, solid guy. Shemi Ajayi, it's a discovery for me. I know I've seen his club side football, but what he put into AFCON is quite different from the Shemi Ajayi we used to know before. Mm. And a couple of others, Frank Onyeka. Who had a standout performance for you?
Well, on the side of the Eagles?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'd mentioned Trust Ekong. I mentioned Stanley
Nwabali. Is Ekong deserving of the man of the tournament?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's rare for you to see a defender, you know, come to notch, I think, 3 goals he got in this tournament. And you also have to look at the manner with which he scored those goals. And again, to yesterday, I noticed for the first time, you know, in vivid form, I saw the leadership quality of Trust Ekong. There was a time that Nwabali was actually
throwing tantrums,
and it was if not for the intervention of Ekong, I heard him. Ekong, I read his lips. He was saying, "Calm down," you know. But again, you can't blame Nwabali too. He was a rookie at the Nations Cup. Well, despite the fact that it's shown between the sticks for us, it was clearly a rookie. The Nations Cup is our World Cup, and I think we have limited the power of the Nations Cup, and that's why we think that the Nations Cup is just one tournament there. It's huge, and that's why players with the hearts are the ones that are able to play in the final of the, and they're able to win to win the title. Okay, so, and that was what we saw. So part of what we saw yesterday, the Ivorians were motivated, apart from the fact that the gods were on their side. If you look at the way the tournament had gone for them, they were almost crashing out of the tournament. They lost to Equatorial Guinea 4-0, yet they got to the final and they beat one of the best teams in the tournament. It was travesty for African football that Cote d'Ivoire won this title. You know, they deserve it, you know, on the strength of the fact that they were hardworking.
They were motivated,
and the gods supported them. But they don't deserve it on the top, or on the strength of quality, total quality. They're not the best at all. They're just African champions. But whether we like it or not, they're African champions, and they will reign for the next 2 years. Okay, so I like to look at teams too. You know,
okay.
In terms of performance.
Performance.
I also like to give it to Cape Verde. You know, or Cape Verde, you know, I think that's the way they're pronounced. Yeah. Cape Verde. But again, that's also a consequence, because that's a country that doesn't have a league system.
Yeah.
But that's a consequence of the movement of their players to Europe. Many of them play in Spain. And so, but they were able to come together and they gelled, you know, in this tournament. And that was why we saw what we saw from them. But of course, if they had actually met Nigeria, I'm sure we'll have beaten them, you know, because it would take a clearly experienced team to beat them.
What about DR Congo?
DR Congo, well, no surprises from them, because they've been one of the powerhouses of African football. People forget the fact that DR Congo had won this tournament twice too in the past, you know, in the 70s. So, but I'm surprised by Equatorial Guinea too.
Yeah.
You know, they also
giant killers.
They also did fantastically well. Yeah, the South African goalkeeper, Rowan Williams, you know, who saved 4 penalty kicks in a single
game.
That's
a FIFA world record.
Yeah, you know. But then we also saw his penalty saving strength when it was time for him to face Nigeria. I think the players sat down and they studied he quickly jumps.
They messed with his head, actually.
Exactly. So, but generally speaking, for me, I think it's been a very, very revealing tournament. You know, beyond individual performance, I think African football has come of age, and countries that used to say "catch me if you can" in the past have to be wary now. Nigeria, Morocco, Senegal,
they don't have to watch their backs.
Ghana, 5-time champion. You know, They are in crisis because they are looking for a new manager. And the report I read is that 600 coaches applied for the job. I think they are just kidding. You know, you want a new manager, just go for one. Go for him, or you shortlist two or three and you employ one. So it's been fantastic for African football. And I think the way Africans move, the way Africans migrate, has also helped the game. You know, we now see a whole lot of Africans in Europe, in almost all parts of Europe, playing the game, and that has helped the game. Unlike in the 90s and the 80s, when it was only a few African countries that had players abroad, Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and that was why they were dominant in those years. That was why it was difficult for Nigeria to beat in the North African countries in the 80s and early 90s. But the moment Nigeria also started going abroad, then that superiority began to wane. So it has actually come to the same level now, because all of these countries now have players playing their trades in big leagues of the world. And so the gap has been closed. And I think it's good for African football. And it's also good for Africa as a continent, because I think, the game has also in some way reduced the level of poverty, you know, imagine those players that we saw at the tournament not playing football. What would they have been doing? You know, so for me, it's been a great tournament. Great tournament.
Interesting. I would have loved this conversation to continue, but we have to leave now because of time constraints. But then overall, it's been an interesting conversation, beautiful and great insights from you. Thank you for your time this morning.
Always.
And I pray that in your time and my time, we'll witness the best of Eagles that would go to the World Cup, claim the World Cup, dominate Africa and shine on the world stage.
Amen.
You believe it?
Amen.
You believe it? Okay. I also pray that in my time and your time, we'll see our local football develop and become a thing of joy and pride to us.
Amen. I say amen to that too.
Thank you so much for your time this morning. It's been a fantastic session. Up next is Lori Kwakpa. Please join Lori Odo. So please join us on that as well. My name is Emmanuel, okay? I'll see you on Wednesday.
Download the Fresh FM app on your Android phone, tablet to listen to Fresh FM
anywhere in the world.
To download, go to Google Play Store and App Store. Search for Fresh FM Nigeria. Select the icon, tap, and install for free. Follow the on-screen instructions, complete the installation, and get our content anywhere on